views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome back for the second hour. You're with Derek Wasiak here from 9 till 10. NHL playoffs in 60 with the Waz. My special guest tonight, when he joins us, will be Rick Carpinello of the Journal News and Rangers Report. All Rangers info all the time, covering the Rangers since late 70s. But first, last time I was with you, the Rangers were at 1-1 in their series last week with the Pittsburgh Penguins heading to the road. And now it's a week later, and the Rangers have taken them down. So let's string up, let's put up my little theme song for the Rangers. Give you a little taste of what on the last week. Like I said, 1-1, the series was as they headed to the road. But the Rangers had 28 road wins this year. And the train just got revved up and ready to roll as they went into Pittsburgh for Game 3. And that was Monday night. Monday and Wednesday, they were out in Pittsburgh. And things were started in a hurry as the Rangers, like they have done all season long, responded off a bad loss. That Game 2 at the Garden responded, though, on the road in Pittsburgh. And took control defensively right from the get-go. And halfway through that first period, one of the stars of this series, Carl Hagelin, on a nice stretch pass from Keith Yandle, had gotten the Rangers out to a quick 1-0 lead. After that, Chris Kreider had built that lead to 2-0. And what would wind up being a theme in this series, a big theme, was the D unit of six men taking charge and control. As the Rangers won this game 2-1, and 2-1 wound up being a familiar score the rest of the series. They continued their road dominance on Wednesday. Now, Wednesday night, Pittsburgh, as they did all series, playing very good tight checking hockey against the Rangers, got fabulous goaltending from Marc-Andre Fleury. And they were on the Rangers early in game four. They controlled the better part of the first 20-25 minutes. So Rangers felt their way around, but when they got going in that second period, they started to take control from a defensive standpoint. And when things got going their way offensively, it was the man late in the second, Derek Brassard, put up his third goal of the series. He would wind up leading the team in goals this first round. And he got a big goal mouth scramble goal for the Rangers to get it knotted up after 2-1-1. And then the first of back-to-back overtime wins. And this one was early. And in this one, a young player that a lot of Ranger fans, a lot of riders maybe, a little worried about, maybe he was a little nervous, was finding his way in the playoffs. But when he struck, the Rook struck in fantastic fashion as Purple Haze, with the game winner in overtime, arrived on the scene in strong fashion. And now the Rangers were up 3-1, heading back to the Garden. And at the Garden, you know it already, because you watched them take them out in five, another 2-1 game. And this one was a little more up and down action. A lot of shots on net in this game. 35 plus shots for each team. But like they did in game one, maybe not 28 seconds in, but early in the game, power play cashed in right away. Boyle threw one from the point, and Derek Stepan was camped out right in front of Fleury. He pounced on a rebound and put it home for a 1-0 lead. Pittsburgh tied it in the second, but then again, strong third period, back and forth action, nip and tuck, 1-1. That's right. We head to overtime. And in overtime, it was Carl Hagelin, halfway through, taking a puck that Dominic Moore worked so hard to keep in on the forecheck and work it down low. Swung out in front, threw one past Fleury, and Pittsburgh was done. And Evgeny Malkin left town with no points. The Rangers won four games by a score of 2-1. And the Rangers' defense and Lundqvist himself allotted Evgeny Malkin, injury or not, 0 points. And this defense was the story in this playoff series. because in a series where Pittsburgh came in with a depleted defense, missing three starters, probably the only thing you could pick out as a negative would be that the Rangers' top nine forwards did not produce an even strength the way you would be expecting against a riddled defense such as Pittsburgh. But in their defense, Pittsburgh played fabulous defensively, and Fleury was amazing in net, as strong as you could be. But in this series, the difference was the Rangers' defense. And for me, watching this team and looking at game by game, the MVPs of this series for me, number one, Dan Girardi. If you weren't aware, and I know we always tend to focus on the goals, so we're looking at Brassard and Stepan and Hagelin's big scoring in the overtime and Hayes. But Dan Girardi was the best player in this series. You talk about blocking shots, defending the big scorers on Pittsburgh, providing offense from the point. He had at least two or three assists in this series, and he was just strong, strong defensively and just kind of represented the defense as a whole. And the other MVP for me was Carl Hagelin. I thought Carl Hagelin had an excellent series, not only with the big goals in Game 3 and 5, but on the forecheck. And so the Rangers sit and wait. They'll wait for the Game 7 winner between the Caps and the Islanders tomorrow night. And for me right now, I will reflect a little more on the series as I welcome in my special guest, Rick Carpinello of the Journal News. Rick, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm good, Dick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing real good, and I'm happy you could join me on short notice once again because Rangers got a little rest here as we wait for a big Game 7, maybe possibly the only Game 7 in the first round. We'll find out when Detroit plays Tampa, if Tampa stays alive tomorrow night as well. But for now, the big Game 7, old Patrick Division rivals, the Islanders and the Capitals are going to go at it tomorrow night. So let's go back to the Rangers. They just finished up with Pittsburgh, and you heard my opening monologue, but what were your thoughts following the series and tracking what was going on?
Well, first of all, I expected it to be a tough series, and I don't think that the fact that the Rangers won in five means it wasn't a tough series, because I think it really was. And I thought the Rangers had to battle through a lot of stuff here. You know, their own inability to follow a win with a win in game two. And then I thought they had, I thought game two they were terrible. And I thought that they had a really bad start in game four after going up 2-1. Right. And I think, you know, they put themselves in some difficult positions there. And also, as we know, even though they scored three power play goals, the power play let them down a lot in that series.
Yep.
So, you know, it wasn't easy. It certainly wasn't. And Fleury, I thought, as you said, I thought he was fabulous. He may have been the better goalie in the series, as a matter of fact. He was really good. And so, you know, my thoughts are that the Rangers got out of there in five, and they should be really happy because it was not an easy series for them. They're going to have to be better, and I think they know that. I think their performance in Game 5 tells me that they finally figured this out, that they have to, even if they have to trick themselves into being desperate, they have to be desperate in these playoffs, and they have to take care of business when it's there in front of you. And I think that they did a good job with that in Game 5. I thought that was really that was a real eye-opener for me in terms of where this team is mentally and in terms of preparation.
You know, Rick, just like in the regular season, with a lot of first time in a long time, or a lot of first, like setting a new franchise record for road wins, yeah, those kind of things, in the playoffs you had another first for a rookie, first OT goal, that Hayes had his first NHL playoff goal since Don Murdoch in 78, or even the 4-2-1 games. I mean, if you didn't, you know, if you were wondering what it was like living back in the 1920s or 30s, well, you got a taste of that in the series with all the 2-1 games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of good things going on with the Rangers from the standpoint of I was reminded of how they looked immediately after the trade deadline by the way their defense played in this series. Did you get the same type of feeling?
Yeah, their defense, you know, that defense is their calling card. I completely agree with you that Girardi was probably the MVP of that series, if not for Fleury. And you know, I think he was their best player throughout. He was a monster, just a monster. And, you know, the other guys were really good, too, McDonough and Stahl especially. But the guy who surprised me quite a bit, at least through the first four games, was Yandel. He played a tremendous series.
Right.
So, you know, now you talk about, you know, how Hunwick was so solid, how Boyle's gotten a little better as the series went on, and now maybe Kevin Klein's coming back. You know, the Rangers are people around the league say the Rangers have the best defense core, the whole group, in the league. And I tend to believe that they're as good as anybody defensively. And that's got to be their calling card because we've seen, you know, we saw them roll up 53 wins mostly by defending. And that defense that they have and the way they play defense, team defense, creates their offense because they're a transition team and they're a team that, you know, makes a quick first pass and they're on the move and they get to use their speed that way. Defense is their calling card, and I think that's what's going to get them through. Obviously, it doesn't hurt to have a pretty good goalie back there too.
No, absolutely, and you know what happens even for a team psychologically or in their performance overall. You saw what happened with Nashville losing a guy like Shea Weber. Or you witness what goes on in Montreal on the power play with a guy like Subban at the point. But I truly believe that acquiring Keith Yandle at the deadline gave the Rangers to just have what you said, the best team of six defensemen. And Hunwick, far and away, the best number seven defenseman in the NHL, whether we have anybody who tracks that. But I'll tell you what, definitely much more of a positive effect on game in and game out. Granted, only five games in the first round, but much stronger at the back end of the defensive unit than they were last year with John Moore in there. You know,
and Hunwick could probably be the number three on Pittsburgh right now, or the Islanders the way they are banged up right now. You know, Hunwick could play on a lot of teams' top six for sure, and he's probably going to come out when Klein comes back. But you know, if you're going to go play into June, you're probably going to need a seventh defenseman again. So the Rangers have a good one.
Yeah, and so he's ready to go. If anybody, listen, as soon as Klein had gotten hurt, I mean, Hunwick stepped in strong fashion. The Rangers just did not miss a beat, and that doesn't go unnoticed. Now,
you know, what it reminds me of too is there was a point, you know, real early in the season when McDonough was out, Klein was out, Moore was suspended, and trying to remember, there was another guy. I think they were missing four of their top six.
Well, Boyle had gotten hurt.
Boyle, that's it. And they had McElrath and Allen up here.
Right.
And Hunwick was playing top 4 minutes. He did a great job.
Yeah.
You know, he was tremendous in that stretch of games there. So the guy can play. I mean, he can skate. He moves the puck. And I think he's gonna be a free agent. He's gonna get a nice job somewhere.
Right. Now along the lines of Carl Hagen, because I spoke about Carl Hagen, I tell you, right behind Dan Girardi, I thought Carl Hagen was tremendous, especially in games 1, 3, and 5. But overall, I thought he was excellent, and to a little lesser extent because he's not a point getter. But on the forecheck, killing penalties, but on the forecheck especially, in defending in the attacking zone, I thought Jesper Fast was really good in the attacking zone also.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Hagen, and I say this a lot, is on this team that uses its speed on the rush so much, you don't really notice his speed, even though he's the fastest guy on the team, maybe the fastest guy in the league. You don't notice him as much on the rush as you do on the forecheck.
Right.
You know, when the puck's in the offensive zone, that's when he uses his speed. That's when he's quick to the puck, and that's when he forces turnovers. I mean, he did score the breakaway goal in these playoffs already, and that was tremendous. But he normally gets his offense and does his damage with his feet in the offensive zone as a forechecker. And I think that's very underrated, that short distance speed that he has and the way he does get on top of the players with the puck. He forces a lot of stuff to happen. And on the penalty kill, too. And Alain Vigneault said, you know, early in the season that his speed is intimidating. And that's something to have. That's a real weapon. Some of the other guys, you know, like Kreider skates like that, and he doesn't use it as much as Hagelin does on the forecheck.
Right.
And there are very few guys who do, I think.
You know, in a series where I thought I gave Pittsburgh's D, mostly the goaltender, but I gave their D a lot of credit for hanging in there and battling defensively and taking away stretch passes from the Rangers, guys like Martin and Lovejoy and those. But I thought that Hagelin, if anybody, was able to do that better than anybody, utilize his speed to stretch the ice. That goal obviously would stand out in anybody's mind. But even on other rushes up ice, quick outlet passes, and he was able to get to the outside and take it in and start whatever it was going to be, the cycle or just, you know, moving the puck for a quick chance.
Yeah, and he did. He backed him off a lot in the series. And, you know, I thought he was tremendous.
He was, and I'll tell you, and it's sad to say this because, I mean, it just builds in your mind as a diehard Ranger fan. I thought Rick Nash had a very good series.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually hoping that he would get things started on the redemption process in player performance, goal scoring wise, in overtime the other night, and he almost did. If he could have elevated that one timer, I mean, I think it was Martin that blocked it by accident.
Yeah.
Better or for worse, but you know, he's a goal scorer, and I appreciate the way he works. He plays hard, but at a certain point, like even a guy like Pavel Datsyuk, who's won Selke trophies, when his team won the cup, he scored 9-10 goals. So I'm just hoping that as we go into the second round, I'm hoping he gets that sniper, you know, status going quicker rather than having it be something that hangs over his head, especially if they're even in a series or something like that. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, he did get one goal. I know it came in a loss. He had 4 points, which is not bad. Like he had a post, and he had the one off Martin's skate.
Right.
And, you know, so he did get chances. I mean, these were legitimate chances. They weren't like the kind of chances they were saying he was getting in the finals last year. These were legit. He had a bunch of them. And, you know, they need him to score goals, obviously. He doesn't have to score 20 goals in the next 2 months. He has to score a few, and he has to score some big ones. But, you know, you look around the league, and Stamkos is going through it. Nothing.
He's got nothing.
Malkin, Crosby, you know, this happens. Teams shut down guys, and that's why you're seeing these 2-1 games. You're also getting, you know, you also have the rodeo coming back with what the officials are letting go now.
Right.
It's pre-lockout hockey, and so you know things are tough for him. It's not there's not a lot of open space, and the rush was kind of shut down by Pittsburgh. They played a lot in the neutral zone, and you know that's how Nash got a lot of his goals during the season was off the rush. It was off 2-on-1s and give and goes. So I think you should be thrilled. I know a lot of people don't want to hear it with the way he played. I thought he was really good. I thought he was tremendous as a hockey player in the series. And I understand that he has to score goals, but he's not going to get a lot of room to score a lot of goals. And he doesn't have to score a lot of goals. He has to score some. There's no question he has to score some goals.
Yeah, I wasn't concerned about it because of the complexion of the games. You know,
right.
4 2-1 games, when are you ever going to see that? Like I said, this is like bringing back the 1930s and playing hockey. So another guy I wanted to touch on, and maybe I didn't give him enough, you know, props because I probably didn't give him any except mentioning when he scored in a game to tie it in game 3. But I thought Derek Brassard had an excellent series. He was a little more physical than normal, and I thought he was better on the back check and better on faceoffs. And unlike Nash, he was shooting at a 25% rate at 3 goals on 12 shots. Yeah. That's pretty good. I thought he had an excellent series, though.
He did. And he always seems to he's got some great stats against Pittsburgh. I forget whether 12 or 13 goals or something in 20-something games against Pittsburgh.
Right.
Loves playing against Crosby. I guess they have some history. He has juniors. And he really competes against them. And you're right. I thought he had a good series. I don't think he was one of their best players just because of the scoring, but he was good. And he was also a guy who won some faceoffs, especially to start power plays. You know, whereas the other center the power plays tend to start with step on losing a draw and the puck going right out. How many times this season we've seen that? And, I thought Brassard did a good job of starting some of the power plays in the offensive zone with a one faceoff.
Right.
But you know, he's better on the draws. There's no question about it than Stepan is. And you're right. I think he had a good series. I think he can play more consistently. You know, he took some penalties that I thought were kind of lazy. Offensive zone penalties,
especially game 5.
Yeah. I think he can play. I think he can play better. I think we've seen him play better.
Yep.
But he played well. He played well.
He had big goals. I will say that. One in the loss was a big goal to cut it to 3-2. He did have two pretty ones and one where he had a fight in the goal crease to get that game tied up.
Yes.
You know, before overtime in game 4, right? So,
yes.
The other guy I wanted to talk about was Matt Zuccarello. So we're going to go based on opinion because we know how the NHL is. They're all like Bill Belichick with injuries now.
Yeah.
Client situation and Zuccarello situation. Talk about them both from just your standpoint, your opinion on what's going on.
I mean, there's really nothing to tell. Like you said, everything's locked down right now.
Right.
Rangers didn't practice yesterday or today.
Okay.
So there's nothing to see, nothing to know.
Right.
They're not saying anything. So tomorrow they're going to have an optional practice in the afternoon, and we'll see if he's out there. And if he's not out there, we may not get information. So
right.
hard to imagine. I think Klein will probably be at the optional skate.
Right.
But whether he's ready or not remains to be seen. You know, it seems to me that he's close. I'm not sure if he had a setback or if he was just a little sore after his practice the other day, or if they just said, hey, it's 3-1, why don't we just wait a little longer. I'm not sure what came down there, but he should, you know, in my opinion, he should be getting really close to being ready if he's not ready already. But we don't know anything about Zuccarello. We don't even know what the injury was, if it was a concussion or if it was a jaw.
Right.
Who knows? It could just be that he got his bell rung a little bit and they have to go through the concussion protocol, and that's why he was held out.
Right.
But as you know, or as you probably know, that, you know, in the post game, AV did say that Zuccarello's all right. He heard Zuccarello's all right. So he said in the commotion of the celebration in the locker room, somebody told him that Zuccarello's okay.
Yeah, from the from the standpoint of not knowing what's going on, because the head's a tricky situation and different for different athletes.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing was he didn't get knocked down the ice by the shot. Right? It wasn't like he had to be carried off. He left on his own. That's a positive.
Yeah, it probably is. It probably was. You know,
he wasn't
bleeding. He didn't look like he was spitting out teeth.
Right, and he wasn't like, you know, woozy or unable to leave the ice on his own, which is a good thing from
the other,
trying to shake it off.
The best thing about it in my mind was that when he got hit,
right,
he heard plastic.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't hit him flush. It didn't hit him in the forehead or in the face.
Right.
It hit the helmet. So.
Which is good, but the whole act with the concussion is the brain shaking within
your
skull.
Question. There's no question, but it would have been a lot worse if
he
hit him somewhere where the helmet wasn't.
No, I agree with you on that, and that's why I tend to think it's not his jaw.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, having a fracture or something like that.
Yeah, yep.
With Klein, to be honest with you, and I would tell any fan to look at it this way, especially if they follow you on Rangers Report on Twitter, I look at it this way. When Rick Carpinello comes on in the afternoon after a practice and says that Kevin Klein is firing shot after shot, like 7-8 consecutive slap shots, and joking around with players like banging against the glass between drills and stuff, then I'll know that he's coming back in. I'm sure he'll be back in right away, but that's what I'm looking for on Twitter. When you do that, I know that he's coming back. That's how I look at that.
And he's only just started shooting pucks.
Right.
So he's got to know that he can win a battle in the crease and against Jason Chimera or Matt Martin. You know, it's not going to be, it's not just a matter of whether he can shoot the puck.
Right.
He's got to be sure that he's not going to cost them a goal because he can't move a guy because his arm's not strong enough at this point. Because, let's face it, I mean, like we said, Hunwick's done such a good job. Hunwick at 100% is better than Klein at 80%. So, you know, he's got to be smart here, too.
No, he does. Now, since we're on, you mentioned Chimera and Martin. Tomorrow night, down in Washington, D.C., Islanders, Capitals, Game 7. Pains me to say this, but I got to be honest with you. I thought the Capitals were going to win this series in 6 before it started. After watching the way the Islanders dominated the better part of the first 4 games, the best I saw the Caps play was in the overtime when they won in Game 4.
Yeah.
And obviously the third period of Game 5.
Right.
But overall complexion, and looking at the Capitals' history, I think they're like 1-4 in their last 5 Game 7s at home.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, for some reason I think the Islanders are going to take this tomorrow night. Don't ask me why. I think because when people are sitting there saying, well, the Caps win or they're due or all their fans have been suffering long enough, it doesn't always work like that. I'm sorry.
No.
And I just think the Islanders have done a great job playing the Caps game in terms of taking the body. They've actually turned the Caps into the villains because of some of the stuff that's gone on in the series. And they took away their power play edge coming in by not taking a lot of penalties. They haven't filled the box with stupid penalties. And the coaching edge that I gave the Caps coming into the series, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I think Capuano's got his guys playing at a higher level based on talent available. I think this is really what bothers me about the Capitals if you're just looking at the ball, because I think the Islanders have gotten the most out of their roster. Maybe they want a few more points from Ocpozo. But looking at the Capitals, Rick, Ovechkin's got two goals, and the Islanders have limited him for the most part. But when I look at the guys right behind him in scoring, Joel Ward and Troy Brouwer have nothing. Yeah. They haven't scored a goal between the two of them. And those are two veterans. They got a lot of guys that have been through this together.
Yeah.
And I think those are the two biggest culprits right there. What have you seen? What have you noticed from what you've seen? What do you think about this one coming tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, the good part is that they've been playing every other night, so we've been able to watch them.
Yeah, I know.
Because the Rangers have played one night and then they play the next. The thing with the cap, first of all, I don't understand Joel Ward on the first line. I don't get that at all.
Right.
And I agree with you. I wonder what Barry Trotz does now, because they seem like a team that wants to be the big bad Bruins, and they're not. They're a big team, but they're not.
Right.
They're not a big tough team. They're not a scary team. They're not going to intimidate anybody. They're going to hit you. They're going to be physical with you. But I don't think that they're a team that's going to run anybody out of a building. And they play that. They play like they are. They play like that. That's what they're going to do to you. And I don't get that at all. So I'm really a little down on Barry Trotz right now. And that said, I think that I picked the Islanders in seven. So I'm sticking with that.
Well, you may be
good.
A Wiley Coyote. You may
I
be
wouldn't
a super
have
genius.
Any doubt about it if their defense was healthy. But their defense is right now. It's decimated.
Yeah.
I know they played well that way yesterday, but it's going to be a tough test to do it again, I think. But again, behind Ovechkin, you know, Backstrom's starting to come alive. He didn't score a goal for 24 games there, and he
right.
scored a couple now. And he's a pretty good player. I always say this. I don't think he's a much different player than Stepan or Brassard if you give them Ovechkin. but he's a good player. He's
but,
a really
you know
good
who
player.
Else they haven't really gotten much from? He's Mike Green.
Yeah, I don't
a guy who was once a dominant offensive yeah. presence on the point. I mean, no yeah. goals
no,
in six games?
He's not the same player anymore either.
Yeah.
He's playing on third pair a lot now. He's soft. He gives up the puck.
Yeah, well, he may be soft, but John Carlson should be more of a force out there
yes.
in terms of the overall series complexion, and he's not. He's had some nice moments, but he looks very unlike what I've seen from him in the past right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
And I give a lot of credit to the Islanders for that. They have done a great job playing the Caps game because Holtby's playing out of his mind. He's playing excellent between the pipes. So is Halak.
Yep.
You know, so there's that head-to-head matchup. And then Tavares versus Ovechkin, I'd probably give Tavares a slight edge because of the moments he's had, the overtime goal and yesterday's big goal, right, and assist on the game winner. So, I mean, I'd probably give him a little bit an edge going into Game 7 against a veteran of and arguably the greatest goal scorer of all time, certainly, of his era, right?
Right.
And right now, like, the biggest failures are the veteran scorers on the Capitals and their presence behind the bench. That was supposed to be the big change. But the Islanders have played their game, and they're right there with them because the Islanders usually give up a ton of goals.
Yeah, the Islanders, and I agree with you. I agree with him behind the bench thing. I had my questions about Capuano coming in, but he's been pretty good. He's kept them really together.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of playoff experience. He's done a real good job getting the most out of his guys.
He's really pushed the buttons well there, I think. But again, the Islanders play a game that I would think would scare the Rangers a little bit more.
Right.
In that they're fast and physical, and you know they're going to be off the charts jacked up if it's the Rangers.
Well, absolutely, because if they win tomorrow night, that'll be their first series win in over 20 years.
Right, and then to play the Rangers, that's their Stanley Cup.
Absolutely, at this point, because they would be looked at like the 79 Rangers.
Right.
So
I think they're a real dangerous opponent. I'm not necessarily saying they're better than the Capitals, but they're more dangerous, in my opinion. But the Caps, I think the Rangers beat the Caps. I think it'll be five or six games. And I don't think the Caps can stay with the Rangers if the Rangers don't give up a ton of power play goals.
Right. Yeah, they would have to be strong on the penalty kill.
They have to be.
All right, I got to take a break here, but can you stay with me for a few more minutes? I want to get to some of the other
Absolutely.
Series.
Sure.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here at Sports Talk 1240 after these messages.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back. And tonight, Montreal took out Ottawa 2-0 and ended that series in six games. So now, you know, the two first-place teams in the Eastern Conference have advanced. We wait for Game 7 tomorrow between the Isles and Caps. Tomorrow night, Detroit will play Tampa in Game 6 of their series. Detroit's up 3-2. And so Tampa's got a fight. And my guest mentioned Steven Stamkos held scoreless so far, and he's got to get busy with some offense, or Tampa's going to find themselves sitting home before too long. But out west, it is all set. Calgary beats Vancouver in six. Anaheim sweeps Winnipeg. Chicago beat Nashville last night, took them out in six. And today, the Wild down the Blues and beat them in six games. So those are all set. The Chicago Blackhawks are going to play the Minnesota Wild. And the Anaheim Ducks, they're going to play the Calgary Flames. So Rick's good enough to stay with us. Rick, this other series that's going to go off tomorrow, Game 6, Detroit-Tampa. Give me your thoughts on what's going on there.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a surprise to me, I think. I thought Tampa would get through that, and they still might. But the Stamkos thing is, we've seen that before with stars in this game. This time of year, goals are not easy to go by. I go all the way back to, I remember, you know, Mike Gartner having trouble scoring in some of those playoffs for the Capitals, and you know, it was always the case where somebody gets shut down and somebody else has to come through. And but you do need your stars to do something. Stamkos can't come up with a zero and expect to win that series. That series has been really streaky. I guess they had the big one comeback game, and that was pretty shocking. But I'm sure that, you know, Tampa might have maybe thought this was going to be a little easier than it is. I'm not sure. I'm not in their locker room, but sure looks that way. It looks like maybe Detroit surprising them a little bit.
You know, as impressed as I've been with Tyler Johnson, because he stepped up big time all season, but here in the playoffs also, especially that comeback game. I mean, when they were down 2-0, I mean, anybody thought the game was over.
Yeah.
To come back in the last 5 minutes and then win in overtime. Yeah. The disappointing part is you come home tied at 2 for a game 5, a pivotal game 5. And Detroit, you want to know something? Unlike the Capitals in that series with the Islanders, the Red Wings, very good on the power play all season long and continued it here, right? I mean, they've gotten that power play goal whenever they needed it, and they're poised to now win it at home in a game 6.
Yeah, and they play such a simple game, Detroit. You know, they just, first of all, you talk about coaches. I mean, that guy, he does a tremendous job. And then you talk about their, you know, their veteran players are such, they just keep things so simple. Dotsuk's amazing.
Right.
He's an amazing player. But the rest of the guys, too, they're just such solid trench kind of players. They tend to get away, as everybody complains, they get away with a little bit of holding and tackling,
right,
obstruction. But they're just a good team, and they know how to play the game. And they don't do it. They really don't do a lot of fancy stuff. And I think, you know, sometimes power plays, that's what it's about, is not doing fancy stuff. Is that, you know, getting the puck down low, getting somebody to move to a hole, and getting them the puck. And they do that really well. They're not, they shouldn't be a better power play team than the Rangers. They should not be, but, you know, they are. So, you know, whatever they do, maybe we shouldn't be surprised. If they beat Tampa, I will be a little surprised.
You know, they kind of rebuilt on the fly with guys like Tartar and Nyquist and Sheehan, to add in with the steady veteran presence they got. And I thought, maybe not the biggest move you've ever seen, but I thought that the coach showed a lot by going with Mrazek in net, 22-year-old over the established Howard. I thought that was a bold move, and it's worked out. Big
shocking
time for him so
shocking
far.
It's shocking to me. So many of these coaches have done that this year. It's surprising to me, and it makes it difficult to argue with the few guys out here in Rangerland who think Talbot should have played or think Talbot should get a chance to play in these playoffs. You know, it makes it hard to argue against that when all these backups are doing so well and being called upon. You know, of course, there's no reason for the Rangers to do that with the way Hendricks played, but, you know, there are some Talbot fans out there that want to see that. I think it's amazing. You know, you over the years, you always heard it's all about the goaltending, it's all about the goaltending. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe some of these teams can get by with their backup or with a guy who hasn't proven anything. And certainly, first round has shown that they can.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I definitely thought Tampa was going to win this series. I really think they did themselves a disservice by not building off of what they did with that big comeback win in Game 4. And this might be something that they truly regret tomorrow night. It might be similar to what happened to St. Louis. St. Louis, you know, was in Minnesota, gets a big 6-1 win to tie a series of two. They come home for Game 5, and they don't take advantage. They lose. Well, goes back to that whole thing you talk about, where's really the home ice advantage.
There's no home ice advantage, and the one thing I learned, and I learned this from Kevin Lowe, there's no momentum game to game in the playoffs.
There is not.
There's
not at all.
It never is. There's nothing. There's no carryover from the previous game that will mean anything in the next game. And you can gain confidence in a game. You can learn how to forecheck better. You can run a better power play. You can fix things. But whatever it is, when the puck drops the next game, what happened last game doesn't matter at all.
Not at all. And you know what? I actually felt that way all season with the Rangers. There were countless games I didn't think they played well, and they just come back the next game like nothing happened and get a win.
Somebody in the press box the other day was saying, somebody who doesn't see them play all the time, somebody said, the Rangers are pretty good, huh? He said, you know what I don't see? They don't look like they're a great team to me, but they just win and win and win. And that's a really good way to put it. I mean, you're right. They had stretches this season where they had to score 5 goals to win, and they did it. They had stretches this season where, you know, Talbot had to steal games, and he did it.
Yeah.
They've had games they had to win late, and they did it. You're right. Them the find-a-way Rangers, and that's what they've been.
I've seen that phrase from you a lot, and you think about how dominant they were on the road, but think about that one trip. I remember that. I think it was a game in Colorado, and there was, I think, the second period or the beginning of the third, I couldn't believe the pressure Colorado was bringing. I was like, there's no way the Rangers are going to win this game.
Yeah.
And then they scored maybe 3 goals in the last 10 minutes. And all of a sudden they went 6-3 or something like that.
You're right. And they get pinned in their own end, and line after line, wave after wave. They don't have the puck at all. And then all of a sudden somebody knocks one loose and mashes off on a 2-on-1, and he scores. So they're right, you're right. They found ways all year, and they had guys like Dominic Moore score big goals. And they're a team. They're not a great team, but they're a team that just wins, and they're really dangerous.
Yeah, and you know, I remember I was tweeting with you one day, and I agree with you that this whole home ice thing. And I remember I said I used to think that home ice meant something if you had it and there was a game seven. And all of a sudden, if you look back at last year there were seven game sevens in the NHL playoffs, and six times the road team won. And I think I look back just through the years with just the last 3 years, the Rangers pretty much started to build things 2012, 13. So since 2012, I think it's 16 game sevens, 10 times the road team's won.
Amazing.
You know?
It's amazing.
And the Rangers, of those six times that the home team won, the Rangers won three of them. So maybe that's why I say maybe for the Rangers it does mean something, because what are they, 5-0 in game sevens?
Yeah.
At home, but the Capitals are 2-7 overall, but 1-4 in their last five at home. So for them, it means nothing. Good luck with that hanging over your head.
But the Rangers also won the two road games too. So
yeah, they beat
Game 7. So.
Yeah, they beat Pittsburgh on the road. Yeah, I mean
they beat Washington in games.
Yeah, in 2013, right? That 5-0 game.
Yeah. So, Aaron Ashram.
Yeah, I know. And Delzato scored in that game too, I think. Who did we trade him for? when they traded him for Kevin Klein, somebody sent me a video and said, check out this fight. And I just watched the fight on hockeyfights.com.
Yeah.
And I saw Klein go at it with this guy. I think it was Roussel. A big, tough guy. Gave him a good beating. I'm like, all right, we're getting a guy who can, help stand up for his teammates and play a little defense, hopefully. Because he wasn't a 22-year-old coming to the Rangers.
Yeah.
And think about how you felt as a Ranger fan when Stroman left in the offseason. And then think about what you really thought once you saw what Klein provided this year. I mean, tremendous.
Yeah.
And the team just picked up for him when he got hurt. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Not to go off on another topic, but since you mentioned Stroman,
right,
having a discussion today, imagine how good this Ranger team would be if they had kept Stroman, Brian Boyle on this current team and had Callahan instead of San Luis right now.
Well, maybe, but St. Louis scored 8 playoff goals last year. I don't know
he
if
did.
I,
I'm
I
saying,
don't know
right,
if he can
I'm
do that, though.
I'm not discounting what he did last year.
Right.
I'm saying this year, plug those three guys in for Dan Boyle, Tanner Glass, and this version of Martin St. Louis.
You know, I have an undying loyalty for St. Louis. I really don't care. I got to be honest with you. When I look at last year, I don't think any of that happens. When I think of right now, the Rangers beat the Penguins back-to-back playoff series, Rick. Back-to-back playoff seasons, they beat the Penguins. They never beat them in my lifetime before last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of that whole scenario surrounding Marty leading into that Game 5.
Yep.
You can't – I'll never regret that trade.
No. I'm not saying regret it for sure.
I think the question should be, imagine if the Rangers just re-signed Stroman and didn't go after Boyle.
Yeah.
Right,
and they kept Brian Boyle,
and then you had Klein because of the trade. Right, yeah. I mean, if they just kept that intact, it would be, because the defense has been flat out amazing.
Yeah,
it really has.
Tremendous.
All part of the process. This team, I love the way these young guys have developed, and so now Tampa, you know what? They might be sitting home after tomorrow night.
Yeah, I still give them a real good chance in that series.
Well, I do, but I think Bishop's got to, close the door. He has to, because I thought that was the reason they got swept last year, because he was out hurt. But now this year, he hasn't been as standout a goalie as you would have expected.
No, nope.
Last
but Detroit
seasons.
Doesn't exactly have Carey Price either. So
no, they don't. But Mrazek has been real good for a 22-year-old stepping in there.
Yep.
You know, with the pressure of he's taking over for a veteran guy. Not that Howard won a Stanley Cup, but still he's been there a number of years as their starter, and so this guy, he's done a great job. You know, think about this: after blowing that game four with a 2-0 lead, right? And to respond right back and get a shutout.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yep,
so,
it is.
Now, in the Western Conference, the Calgary Flames took out Vancouver. Did you catch a lot of that series?
I didn't. I saw a lot of the endings.
Right.
The endings were so bizarre. But I couldn't see a lot of it, no.
Because I'll tell you, these young guys, not only Johnny Gaudreau, because everyone talks about him, but this other kid's 20 years old. Sean Monahan had 5 points in that series. I mean, Yuri Hudler's been real good for them. I mean, he came over eventually from Detroit. I mean, this team can score with you. They play great 5-on-5. They can put a point. They put up a ton of points on the power play against Vancouver. They made them pay for almost every penalty they took.
Yeah.
But the one thing that stands out now, they're going to go against Anaheim. I know Getzlaff and Perry. But they're a little suspect in net. Anaheim does give up a number of goals. But this Calgary team, Rick, Bob Hartley is as good a coach as I've ever seen. And I'm not trying to overplay that at all. I know people get on him because they had the big line brawl at the end of one of the games. He doesn't care. What he cares about is what his teams do collectively and in sticking together and working for those wins. And that he is as tough a coach as I've seen. He's very quiet about it. And you just kind of witness things happen. Like last year when it happened, Tortorella went on a tirade, and they kind of focused on him. You know, but this is how Hartley is. He wants his teams playing tough. And they're one of the best third-period teams in the NHL. And that's a young team there. Think about the guys up and down their roster. They got a lot of young guys. This kid, Sam Bennett, what is he, 18 years old? Right? Marcus Cronin? I'll tell you. The reason I'm talking to you about Calgary is here's why I'm going to take them to beat Anaheim. Not only is Anaheim a little suspect between the pipes, but I think they're a little suspect behind the bench also in the coaching category with Boudreaux. I think he's a decent coach. I just don't think he's a great coach, and he's certainly not better than Hartley. But one thing I noticed this year was I was reading an article about Hartley and the Calgary Flames, and I was talking to Don LeGreco about this last week, but just briefly. And Hartley was talking about his team and the third-period presence with the goal-scoring, coming back and winning games, and he was talking in this article about the new strength and conditioning coach. The kid's name's Ryan Van Asten. So at the time in the article, he was talking about how they had to watch this guy get his Stanley Cup rings when they went back to L.A. to play. Turns out this guy was the strength and conditioning coach from L.A. for their two Stanley Cups. And you know as well as I do, when you watched that Stanley Cup last year, you were like, the Rangers, how could they blow this many leads? For a team that never blows third-period leads, they lost two. Game two and game five. Two third-period leads. The Kings never stopped coming in games. They came back countless times. The Rangers never scored after the second period in that series. And all I could think about was the way I thought about the 94 Rangers in terms of conditioning. That Ranger team was the best conditioned team. And the way the LA Kings were last year in the Cup, I'm like, man, this team, they are in tremendous shape.
And they played 21 games to get there.
Right? So this article I'm reading about this guy getting his Stanley Cup rings, and Hartley's like, the guys are there, they're watching this guy get his rings, and he's talking about the energy he brings to the workouts, and the guys are, you know, really into it, and the camaraderie that builds, and they're really, you know, he keeps things new and fresh with the workouts, and he's talking about the comeback ability and the togetherness. And I'm like, why would this guy leave L.A. to go to Calgary? So I finally Googled his name one day, and I did a little research. Turns out the kid, Ryan Van Asten, he's from Calgary, and he wanted to go back home. And that's why he got that job. Talk about Bob Hartley discovering gold by accident.
Wow. And
I don't think there's I don't think there's any mistake in what's going on in Calgary. I think a lot of people might not be thinking about it. I just happened to see the article, and for me and you, I think about that Stanley Cup last year with the Rangers and the Kings. And I see what this team's doing now in Calgary. And Calgary wound up eliminating the Kings from postseason contention. They had beaten them right down in the last week. So I heard that on the radio. But then during the broadcast, I heard how they beat them four times this year.
Wow.
So they basically eliminated them, period, by themselves.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, I'll give a ton of credit to the strength and conditioning coach for what's going on in Calgary. I really do. And you know what? And I'm going to take them to beat Anaheim. For some reason, and you know Anaheim, you know, they found a way to lose. I think they were up 2-0 last year against the Kings. I'll tell you what. I think Calgary, with the way their goaltending, and not dead set in net, but the way their goaltending has been the last few weeks and the way their offense is produced, especially on the power play, I think they're going to take Anaheim out. Is there any thoughts on that series coming up?
That's interesting. You know, the funny thing is, some of us were talking last week about how, you know, any of the 16 teams that are in could probably win the Stanley Cup. And I just made an off-the-cuff comment. I was like, it's really going to be hard for me to imagine the winner of the Winnipeg-Calgary series going winning the Stanley Cup.
Right.
But you know what? You're right. They're pretty good. They're dangerous. There's a certain level of house money involved because it's been so long for them. And then you're right about Hartley. He ticks off a lot of people. I remember John Muckler going after him one time when he was coaching Colorado. After a game, chasing him on the ice because he sent that guy Parker out after somebody.
Yeah,
and
he doesn't care though.
No, and he ticks off everybody. Yeah. But you're right. In terms of coaching a team, motivating a team, and then coaching a team on the bench, he's tremendous, and he's done a great job with that. You're right. They could beat Anaheim. Anaheim is probably still the best team in the West, and. You know, you look at that lineup, and it's pretty scary. And They've got Kessler going now, too. And
I love Kessler. He's great.
He is.
Great two-way forward.
Tremendous player. And he's a great playoff player. He's a built-for-playoff player. And, again, another tangent, but you know, who reminds me of him a little bit in way, way premature, but JT Miller.
Yeah.
He's got the body and the size and the speed.
JT Miller can throw the body.
Yeah.
He throws some thunderous hits at times, yes.
He's got a little of that Kessler in him.
Yeah.
He's nowhere near as good defensively, and that'll come, I think.
Yeah, he's young. He's stepped it up as the season went along, and he proved himself after the trade deadline that last month.
Yeah.
Now, since I brought up the strength and conditioning coach with Calgary, since you're at Ranger practice a lot, I wanted to ask you, because I actually think, and I'm not around him as much as you, but I actually think Reg Grant, the strength and conditioning coach for the Rangers, I think he does a fabulous job with the team.
I agree.
I mean, think about how healthy he keeps these guys from a flexibility and agility standpoint. And you think about it, right? Lundqvist, Klein, now Zuccarello, those kind of injuries, well, those are all done by pucks.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, but we don't witness a team that's, you know, with the groins and the hamstrings and this, you know, you had McDonough with the shoulder a little bit early on and Stepan with his leg, right?
I can't remember the last time there was a hamstring, groin, or hip, or anything like that, bicep. I can't remember the last time a Ranger missed a game with somebody.
Have you noticed anything from being around practices, and obviously there's more going on during training camp, but just being around practices, anything you notice going around, away from the ice, not just the drills on the ice, but things he does with them in the exercise rooms and stuff?
We don't get back there at all.
You don't get back there at all, okay.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. We watch the game. I'm trying to remember what game it was. It was a home game last week. And Girardi was tremendous, just tremendous. And he was beaten to hell as usual and probably needed 100 ice packs.
Right.
And there's a little door that goes into their, at the garden, into their weight room.
Yes.
And so that's where Lundqvist sits, right by the door there. So we're interviewing Lundqvist. We're all crowded around him. And that door opens every once in a while. And you see Girardi in there killing himself after the game, just like doing stuff you wouldn't believe. Like, you know, guys in the 70s probably never did one of those exercises their whole life.
But this is what I'm talking about.
And this is after Girardi played 28 minutes or whatever the hell it was and just got beat to hell. And he's in there killing himself. These guys are unbelievable condition.
Yeah, we're not talking about slinging around weights either. I mean, they do their whatever weight training, but we're talking about working with the Bosu balls, a lot of core strength exercise.
All that stuff, jumping off these boxes.
Oh, yeah, box jumps, power squats. They use the Bosu ball, the stability balls, the resistance bands. They do it all. I've seen a lot of it when I skate at their training camp games, when I referee, because then I get behind the scenes a little bit, you know, because they have a stress in, you know, where the locker rooms are.
Yeah.
And I get to go in there and work out a little bit because Reg Grant's a great guy.
Yes, he is.
But I see some of the workouts he puts these guys through, and people don't see what goes on away from the ice. And that's part of that whole camaraderie and team together in this building, doing the workouts, putting in the work, the sweat and all that. And I think he does a quiet job. Nobody ever speaks about this kind of stuff, but he does a great job.
He does. And I'll tell you this, too. You know, the last two coaches that this team has had have been dead on in terms of conditioning, and you look back over the years with the Rangers, and when the coach hasn't had that, there's been nothing but failure. You know, a lot of the coaches do not. You know, Muckler didn't stress the conditioning,
right?
And it was disaster. You know, some of the other guys, I won't mention a lot of names, but
probably like
the only
Ron Lowe probably didn't stress it either. Probably right.
The guys who did were Keenan, who did pretty well 1 year.
Yep.
And Herb Brooks, who had a couple of good years, had some good teams.
Again, with the whistle, right?
Right. Again. But those are the guys that stress the conditioning.
Yeah.
And Tortorella was a nut about it. And people still, you can get all up about Tortorella and say whatever you want about what he was and what kind of nut he was. But that team in 2012 shouldn't have been anywhere near where they were.
No.
During a regular season.
I think he was a tremendous part of the building process, just like I do give credit to Roger Nielsen. We talked about this before, leading into Keenan.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just come in here in 10 months and win a Stanley Cup.
No.
There's a building process before that, and it was there. And I give Tortorella that kind of credit. It really is. It sounds like, when people get wound up, they put on their jersey, they go to the pregame parties at the bar and all that, and they, score a goal, we're going to win. But you know what? It's the stuff you don't see that leads to what happens on the ice. And it's no joke with this team. They've been rock solid and consistent all year. And I just want to see that train keep rolling right through the postseason.
And Vigneault does a tremendous job in terms of preparation.
Right.
And you know, all full marks to him. And you're right. The strength and conditioning people on that team, the trainer, Jim Ramsey, they just do tremendous jobs.
They do.
And it pays off at the ends of games.
Yeah. Now, this last series, because this is the other matchup, it's going to be Minnesota and Chicago. Minnesota won today. Zach Parise had another big game for himself. Dubnyk responded after that 6-1 loss, and he basically shut down St. Louis the last two games of this series. But now they're going up against the big, big offensive-minded Chicago Blackhawks. And Kane is just amazing offensively. How do you see this series? I pretty much see Chicago winning. But I'll say that Minnesota extends them because of the Dubnyk factor this year, and it goes seven games.
Dubnyk's amazing, isn't he? Amazing. It's a great story. I thought, you know, there was a time there during the middle of the season where we were thinking, boy, that team's just a goalie short of being pretty good. And then even after Dubnyk came in and started playing, you would wonder, you know, if it was for real. And even heard that they might be one of the teams that was interested in Talbot in the summer.
Yeah.
And you know, this kid is just come out of nowhere. I shouldn't say nowhere because he was good once too. You know, in his other stops, but he's really what he did this year is amazing. And there's so many stories like that, like the Hamburglar guy.
Yeah, he did a great job.
I mean, they just come in and now you've got Darling over there and
that's a big move, right? Going with Darling for the most part, and then Crawford had to come in last night and bail him out.
Taking out a guy's one too.
Yeah, Joel Quenville, another great coach, right? I mean, one of the best I've seen ever.
But then again, you know, not to take away anything from Quenville, but you're always a lot smarter when you have Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews.
They really are stacked.
Matt Hose is a big-time playoff
player. He is. At age 36, and he's still playing out of his mind. And Duncan Keith is just great offense from the point with Brent Seabrook. Right.
I didn't see Minnesota beating St. Louis, so I'm not going to say that they won't beat Chicago. But if I had a team in the West, I still like Chicago.
I think it's going to be Chicago against Calgary in the semifinals, and I'm gonna say it's going to be the Rangers. And for some reason, I think they're going to get a rematch with Montreal, and the whole Carey Price thing will be the headline. About that being the only reason they won last year.
I think so, too. They even mentioned Kreider on the telecast.
That's good. And then the Rangers will stick it to them one more time, and they'll go to the Cup. So here we go, right? All right, I want to thank you for being with us tonight, Rick. I really appreciate it. It was a great 60 minutes of hockey with you, and I'll talk to you at the Garden hopefully Thursday.
Always a pleasure, Jerry.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. And, folks, there you go. NHL playoffs in 60 with the Waz. Rick Carpinello was my co-host tonight. We covered it all. The Fistic Nation, good luck tomorrow night, and I'll see you next time.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.